Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The worldwide spread of COVID-19 made for a strange and difficult end to the 2019-2020 school year in Iowa. It's summer break now, but school administrators are working hard to figure out how to safely resume classes in the fall. This hour, we'll talk about possible return to learn plans for K-12 schools and the many challenges schools are facing when it comes to keeping students, teachers, and other school employees safe. We're going to start the hour in Durham, England, where schools have just resumed this week. With me on the line is Dave Anderson, an Iowan abroad. He is a political scientist, formerly of Iowa State University, now at Durham University. Dave, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Now, your kids went back to school this week. You have a six-year-old who is in year one, which is our equivalent of kindergarten. You also have a child who is in preschool. So before school resumed, what were all of the conversations like?
There was a lot of worry and concern. We were first told that schools may reopen on the 1st of June, and then on the 30th of May, I believe, we were told that, in fact, they would not be reopening, and we would wait 2 weeks. And then we only got clarification that school was going to open on Monday, late on Friday afternoon, and a lot of parents just were not willing to send the kids back. I think in my son's year, there were 40 students, and only 19 came back.
Wow. So what is the plan from the school to keep the, well, let's start with the kids, to keep the kids from spreading COVID-19 amongst themselves?
So the plan is to keep kids isolated in bubbles. The government has said we can have bubbles of as many as 15, but the school has opted to try to keep that to 10. And those 10 children are together throughout the day. They never mix with their peers. They don't visit other classrooms. They don't play outside together. They don't go to lunch together. So from the moment the students enter the school, they are directed into a classroom, and they never leave that classroom. They do all of their activities there together, and they are supposedly socially distancing within the classroom.
How does that look in a kindergarten classroom?
So I have not been allowed to be in to see it, which is kind of fun, but my son tells me that all the desks are separated out around the room, and everybody has their own desk, and there's enough space between them that they can't reach each other's desks, and on their desk they have their own materials, which he absolutely loves, because he no longer has to share his pencils or crayons with any other students, and they just sit at their desk all day.
Wow.
Until it's time to play.
And how do they play? I mean, you said they don't play outside?
No, I believe they're changing that now. There was some concern that if the kids were playing outside, they would all play with the same things, like soccer balls and equipment outside, and they would cross-contaminate that way. So they originally did not have any of the outdoor play space open, and now they're going to reopen that, and they're going to clean it between different bubbles using the facilities.
What is being done to protect the teachers?
That I just don't know. I know the teachers are isolated within their own bubbles, but they do not wear PPE. And in fact, in England right now, there is no order that people should even be wearing masks. So up where we are in the northeast of England, it is very rare to see anybody wearing a mask.
Now, you said that only about half of the students in your son's class went back to school. What does that mean? Are they enrolled in another kind of school, an online school, or are they just not going to school?
They are just not going to school. When the government made the plan to allow schools to reopen, they were rather strategic about it, and they decided that they would only reopen school for 3 years of school, and that was year one, which is essentially kindergarten, and Reception, which is a pre-K program they run in England. And then they also reopened for the final year of what is high school. So most students were not invited back. And a lot of the schools even said, if we're going to socially distance those 3 years, we just don't have enough room to have anybody else in the school.
After this summer term is over, when does school resume for the next year?
So our school year usually goes into the middle of July and then shuts down until about September 1st. So we're only going to have 5 weeks of school now, and then we'll shut down for another 6 weeks. And the plan is to fully reopen schools in September. But I think already there's a lot of questioning about whether that's possible at all.
Well, we're very familiar with that conversation here. Do you feel safe about your kids being in school?
That's a great question. We feel safe right now because we have access to some of the detailed information. For example, there are only 9 active cases, I believe, in this town right now. So that gives me a sense of comfort that COVID is not currently active. But we really have worries that if that number, even if it just doubles up to nearly 20, we're not sure we want to keep our kids in school. The risk, especially when we're over here isolated from family and friends, the risk of us getting sick is just not something we're willing to take.
Well, thanks for giving us a little preview of the future here, Dave. I hope you stay safe and I hope you stay well. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Dave Anderson, an Iowan abroad now at the University of Durham in England, giving us a preview of at least one way that back to school might work in the midst of a pandemic. According to a USA Today Ipsos poll taken back in May, 1 in 5 teachers say they are unlikely to go back to school if their classrooms reopen in the fall. 6 out of 10 K-12 parents said they would likely pursue at-home learning options. So a lot of people are very worried about how to teach students safely in the midst of a COVID-19 pandemic. This hour, we'll talk about the challenges of keeping students, teachers, and others safe, possible learning plans, and how teachers are feeling about the idea of going back to school. You are also welcome to join the conversation with your thoughts. We'd love in particular to hear from teachers and other school employees today. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my first guest today is Dr. Rosanna Rosa, infectious diseases specialist at Unity Point Health in Des Moines. Dr. Rosa, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me back.
So you were just listening to that conversation that I had with Dave Anderson about how his kids are back to school in England. When you hear him talking about a bubble of 10 students and they stay in the classroom all day, they don't go to the lunchroom. Does listening to that make you feel like that is a good plan?
I mean, in theory, sounds like a good plan, but I think I would go back to some of the things that he was talking about towards the end, you know, when you asked if he felt safe, and he said, at this point in our community, there are only 9 cases, right? And so I think this is important because even if you have a bubble within the school, once kids go back home, then are those, it's not likely that those same bubbles are going to be kept within their homes and their neighborhoods, right? So then the bubble expands to, you know, to have more and more people in. And so ultimately, what is happening in the community with the transmission levels in the community is going to impact the schools because we are precisely that. Our schools are part of our community.
So this just increases exponentially the kinds of contacts that people are having with and thinking about that teacher in front of that classroom. She is now in quarantine with her family and the 10 families of all of her students and all of the people that they're coming in contact to.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have seen what has happened, you know, in other countries, you know, in Israel, where they have had outbreaks in some of their schools and high schools after reopening. And in reading the impressions from the community over there, what they say is like, well, you know, in the school they were not properly masking, and in the community people were not masking. So again, what happens in the community will impact what happens in the school.
What do we know about how children pass COVID-19 amongst themselves and to others? Because children have not been regularly tested throughout this entire pandemic.
Yeah, so and I think that is a key point, right? You know, we do know there is a lot of asymptomatic spread. Or that there is asymptomatic spread, I should say. And so, you know, the test itself is very uncomfortable. So if your child is not exhibiting any symptoms, then it's less likely that you're going to take them to the doctor for what is, you know, an uncomfortable test. And so children, I think, are probably tested at a lower rate than other age groups, and also more likely to be tested when they are symptomatic. But you know, they can catch COVID. And so even if they catch COVID, then go on to develop a milder infection, they can still spread it just like anyone else can spread it, and sicken someone who is in a age group at higher risk for worse outcomes, including death.
And we do know, as you said, that children can get COVID-19, and we're learning more about how some children are affected in a really serious way, although we have seen a relatively small number of cases of this inflammatory syndrome that lands children in the hospital.
Yes, yeah, the inflammatory syndrome certainly is something, you know, when we started to learn about it, that is very, it's very concerning. And in some reports are also pointing to it happening in young adults. So again, in general, children will develop a milder disease. Some of them can go on to develop a certainly severe disease that we keep learning more and more about. But we also have to remember, you know, especially in communities where grandparents help a lot with, you know, taking care of kids, you know, during the weekend, or, you know, giving parents a break, that those grandparents are at a much higher risk of poor outcomes if they get COVID.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about return to learn plans this hour. Right now with me, Dr. Rosanna Rosa of Unity Point Health in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel, in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about K-12 return to learn plans. Administrators all over the state of Iowa are working hard to come up with a plan to help students go back to school safely in August. But not just students, teachers and other employees need to be safe as well. And of course, the families of the students and the teachers and the other employees. COVID-19 passes freely through the community. My first guest today is Dr. Rosanna Rosa, infectious disease specialist at Unity Point Health in Des Moines. And we're talking about some of the knowledge that we have that helps us understand the challenges that schools have in going back. And before we bring in our other guests, Dr. Rosa, I want to ask you also about concerns about teachers and other staff members. We've talked about how little we know about how children pass COVID-19 around, but we know that the fact that they can pass this disease and get this disease does put them at risk, but even more so their family members, particularly older family members, at risk. But what about teachers? There are lots and lots of teachers that fall into those high-risk categories.
Yes, and so that is certainly something that is part of the equation, right? You know, teaching is something that is so personal, you know, that So, you know, we have to expect that, you know, there at some point teachers and students do need to come in relatively close proximity. And, you know, certainly if you want to give feedback, if you want to be a good teacher, you want to talk to your students, right? So it goes back to even us thinking of how the virus is transmitted, which is through respiratory droplets generated when you are talking, coughing, sneezing, and things like that. And that, you know, that the risk increases, it's from person to person in prolonged close contact.
With teachers returning to the classroom, we've had a lot of conversations community-wide, nationwide, about masks. And we are learning that the wearing of face coverings, of masks, cloth masks included, can really reduce the spread of COVID-19 among a community. But we've also heard that when I wear a mask, I'm protecting you from me, and your mask protects me. So the teacher is vulnerable to the germs of all of the students in the classroom. What kind of PPE or personal protective equipment would you recommend that a teacher would need to wear to be safe in the classroom?
Yeah, so I think certainly masks have become more and more acceptable within the community, right? But I actually think, you know, that face shields are really, you know, are so convenient specifically in this type of setting, right? We know that face shields are better at blocking droplets and also provide eye coverage, which can also be a port of entry for the virus. And when you think about it, you know, they communicating with each other when we can see our facial expressions, when we can see our mouths, and just actually from, you know, hearing our voices is much, much easier when face shields are used. And when you think about, for example, smaller children, you know, that it's much harder for them to use a mask. CDC even says in children below 2 years, don't put a mask on them. So face shields can also be more easily worn by students, and I think might make communication easier, might make socializing from a distance much easier, and understanding each other and understanding lessons, right, if they happen in person, also much, much easier. So I think, you know, we should really embrace face shields, and we should really embrace the idea of PPE in the community.
And when you're talking about face shields, I think a lot of us have seen the sort of rigid plastic face shields that are worn by physicians and nurses, people in hospital settings right now. But there are a variety of face shields. I've seen pictures from other countries of small children wearing a kind of a floppy hat with a flexible face shield that comes down in front of their face. Do you think that there is some flexibility, some creativity in creating a face shield that wouldn't be uncomfortable for children to wear?
There most certainly is. And, you know, I have a 3-year-old and she has 2 little bucket hats with face shields. And that's what we have used whenever we need to go out and she needs to come out with us. So, you know, the challenge there is, you know, in giving for my 3-year-old, right, always reminding her you don't put your hands under your face shield. But with reinforcement, children learn, and it is so much easier for them to use them.
Well, Dr. Rosa, I want you to stay with us because I'm sure a lot of people will have a lot of questions for you this hour. And we also want to hear from you. If you're a teacher, you're concerned about going back to school, maybe you feel comfortable going back to school. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100. We have a couple of representatives from different school districts I'm going to bring into the conversation in a moment. But first, let's hear from Kelsey. Hello, Kelsey.
Hi, Charity.
Hi. And you're a high school teacher?
Correct.
So how are you feeling?
I am one of those that I'm really excited to go back and see my kids. I love my job, but I'm a high risk person. I'm a younger age teacher, but still have high risk health concerns. So it's making me nervous, but also I want to get back and do my job. So we as a school have been brainstorming ways that still gets me back in the classroom, but keeps myself safe as well as my students.
Are there some solutions that you're leaning toward that sound good to you?
Yeah, right now, obviously the masks and the face shields, but we've talked about putting up physical barriers in the room, something as high tech, quote unquote, as like plexiglass walls for me in the front of the room, or as something as rudimentary as like shower guards to hang throughout the room so that I still have that physical separation.
Oh, wow. Well, and your school will be releasing their plan, I assume, in July. So are you eagerly awaiting that announcement?
I am. Our administration is doing a really good job asking for input and trying to figure out what's best for both teachers and students. So I have faith that they will make the decision that's good for us.
Well, Kelsey, Kelsey, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts right now, and please stay well. I want to bring a couple of other people into this conversation now. Sandy Byard is Health Services Facilitator for the Cedar Rapids Community School District. Hello, Sandy.
Good morning.
And Clark Wicks is also here with us, Superintendent for the Perry Community School District. Hello, Clark.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. And again, schools are working toward a deadline of presenting their plans, but I know that you're all working through a lot of options right now. Sandy, I'll let you start. Can you give us kind of a quick rundown of some of the different scenarios that Cedar Rapids is exploring?
Right now, we're exploring the same options as recommended by the Iowa Department of Ed. It's the continuous learning, the hybrid, and the on-site. And so we're working very hard to come up with our return-to-learn plan. We do have our health and safety plan pretty much ready to go if we do determine that we'll be coming on-site in the fall. So we have some detailed plans on how we're going to protect the health and safety of our students and staff.
All right. And can you break this down for us? Because not everybody's been following the debates super closely. When you say continuous learning, let's just talk about these three different plans. What does that mean?
Continuous learning is the online off-site education.
So distance learning.
The hybrid is a combination of continuous learning, which would be online learning, and some on-site, and then fully on-site.
All right. And Clark, as you are looking at your options in the Perry Community School District, are you looking at the same three options?
Yes, correct. I think all schools are working diligently on the three plans, and in our district, just as well as others, are including a number of people exploring ideas and trying to do the best that we can have a safe but yet manageable setting for all kids as well as teachers and staff.
So, Clark, can you help us understand a little bit about what more of a hybrid plan might look like in a school district?
Well, that's a good question, and you know, in everything that we're doing here, it's all new, but it could be this kind of combination. Kids could come in as an on-site student, and then you may have a student or two, and hopefully not too many, that maybe are compromised in some way, and they need to get their education online. Well, we have to be equipped to be able to do the on-site as well as changed years, and then give that student or a few students the same opportunity that we're giving those that are on site. So it's a tricky combination, but through all of this, you know, the thing that we really want to emphasize is that we want to create as safe of an environment as possible so that even those that are compromised, the teacher that called in, we're going to have those in Perry also. Our thing is we have to make the air as pure as possible. We need to make the surfaces as clean as possible. And we have some interesting ideas that we can do that so that it is, again, manageable and reasonable.
When you talk through all of these options, Clark, tell me about budgeting for this. That's one of the big concerns, is that all of these changes are going to be really expensive. And of course, schools are not known for having lots and lots of spare cash around.
That is correct. It's, you know, you're dealt with the cards that you have. And what we're trying to do is be as efficient as possible. And just one quick example in the hybrid situation, what we hope to be able to do and be able to train our staff as well as parents and kids is that while we're teaching in the classroom, we could have what's called maybe a screencastify that is recording the direct instruction, the follow-up, and somebody that is at home with their computer would be able to also log on and tap into that lesson and still have that that opportunity for teach and learn. So we're still working on that as well as every other school, but you know, we're feeling pretty confident that we can have on-site as well as any other need that comes up.
Well, let's talk about learning equity, because it's one thing to say, okay, if a student can get online and get access to that lesson, then they have the same opportunity as the student who is in the classroom. But what if they don't have high-speed internet at home? How are you dealing with the digital divide?
Well, first of all, Perry, we will have computers for every student. In fact, just last week, we purchased another $84,000 worth of computers for our kindergarten and first grade, just as one example to try to get to that equity question. The second part is connectivity. So there it becomes a situation where partnership is important and everybody's hands are on deck to try to make this work. That means not only online or connectivity businesses, but then also city, school. How can we do this so that it is equitable, it is fair, and everybody feels confident that this is the route to go?
And Sandy, I'd love to hear your thoughts on equity as well in Cedar Rapids, also a big issue for your students.
Is I know that our district is also going to be providing all students a device. We had done it this past year for the high school students. This year was supposed to be the middle school rollout, but we're doing middle and elementary, hopefully before the end of the summer. And we are also working with some local cell companies to purchase hotspots for families that don't have that. That is also in the works and being considered right now to make sure that all students have an equal opportunity to access their education if we can't have them on site.
Sandy, also, let's talk about special education students, because they're in another category altogether. Many special education students can't really get much out of distance learning. I've heard from a lot of parents who are extremely concerned about that, but they also need to have access. Sandy?
Yes, I just lost you there for a minute.
All right. Well, okay. You know what? I'll let Clark tackle that question first about special education students. Clark?
Hey, a great question. And like every situation that we're dealing with, there's opportunities for growth. And what we're looking at with our special needs population is to be able to really show them what we can do, show the parents what we can do, and then we're going to have to be creative. Maybe we might have to have a staff member go to maybe their home to show them some things, to maybe do some more tactile kind of experiments or lessons so that they will have a better understanding. My hope, though, again, my hope is this, and our plan is to make that school so safe that everybody will have that invitational thought, that trust that they can come into the Perry schools as well as, you know, any schools, because we will be working diligently to have it extremely safe. So, and yet, again, reasonable and manageable. But you bring up a good point. There's going to be some true challenges with special needs. But I hope that they can be on site and we'll be able to teach them there.
Yeah, Sandy, can you add anything to that for Cedar Rapids?
Yes, I would agree with Clark. We are considering our special ed population as one of our main concerns, because we do know that some of our more complicated special needs students, some of the students with some severe intellectual disabilities or severe physical disabilities, accessing education at home is not always the best way to do it. So we are considering lots of options like they are in Perry. And we are also focusing on the fact that, you know, if we can have kids on site, we want them on site, but we need to make sure that we're doing it in the safest way so we're not getting kids or our staff ill and protecting our community at the same time.
Well, we would love to hear from you this hour. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. We're going to have to take a short break here. Dr. Rosa, when we get back, I want to talk to you about the special education population a little bit as well, because there are a number of things that can make a child or an adult more vulnerable to COVID-19 that might fall under that umbrella. Dr. Rosanna Rosa is here, infectious disease specialist at Unity Point Health. Sandy Byard, health services facilitator for the Cedar Rapids Community School District. And Clark Wicks, superintendent for the Perry Community School District. Again, you can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about return to learn plans for K through 12 students in Iowa. And with me this hour, Sandy Byard, health services facilitator for the Cedar Rapids Community School District, Clark Wicks, superintendent for the Perry Community School District, and Dr. Rosanna Rosa, infectious diseases specialist at Unity Point Health in Des Moines. And Dr. Rosa, we were talking about special education students just a few minutes ago, and these are students that are particularly vulnerable in so many ways, because distance learning can be very difficult for many of these students. They're used to being in classrooms where they have a higher ratio, or a lower ratio, with fewer students per teacher. That one-on-one or small group time is so important to their education. And yet many of these students may be vulnerable health-wise as well, right?
Yeah, they may be, and I think when we think about how they are vulnerable health-wise, it's both from a physical health perspective, but also from a mental health perspective. Not having that that communion, not having their peers, their teachers, and also when we think about, you know, if they go back to an environment where everyone is wearing masks, you know, where they can see each other's expressions, does that also affect their mental health? I think that is also something that needs to be taken into consideration when arrangements to accommodate them are done for in-person teaching.
I want to read some of the comments that I'm getting from teachers around the state of Iowa. This is a teacher in Madrid who says, "I'm ready to go back to teaching this fall. No concerns other than mental health of people getting back into the pressure of a full schedule. I have anxiety and do not want to wear a mask for 8 hours a day and try to teach." That's one perspective. Here's from a kindergarten teacher in Waterloo. "I've been teaching for 31 years. This coming school year will be my last before retirement. I'm really hoping for in-person learning. I would rather have to do any kind of safety modifications rather than do online school. Online doesn't work very well for kindergarten. When we shut down in March, all but two of the kids could read and write, so I felt like we'd already achieved our main objective. I can't imagine trying to teach them to read and write remotely at the beginning of the year. It takes instruction and practice. During shutdown, I made daily video lessons for them. We did weekly Zoom calls and gave out paper learning packets, but it was very hard to get participation." She also says she is 58 years old and not too worried about her own health. She says, "I don't have any pre-existing conditions or risk factors besides my age. I do worry about bringing germs home to my husband, who does have some risk factors." We have another comment. This is from a second grade teacher in Iowa City. I love my school and our district. I just completed my 17th year. We have an old building that was recently remodeled. Opening windows is not allowed because of the new HVAC system. Recycled air everywhere. That's been a huge concern long before COVID-19 came to our attention. I'm heartbroken and terrified. Heartbroken because I left a class that needed me just hanging in cyberspace limbo. I commute 40 miles to work, live in a very rural place, and my satellite internet means big awkward delays in Zoom meetings, Facebook Messenger calls, just everything. We muddled through, most of my littles and me. I wrote and snail mailed a lot of letters, and that's where we really connected. Oh, these 2020 second graders I love so very much. We were cheated. It was truly a hard ending to the school year, but how do I feel? I'm crestfallen, being allowed 6 masked and gloved hours in my former classroom to clean out every desk and bag up every student's things and not ever get to say I love you or goodbye. It felt like I was in some kind of horror movie, and it was traumatic. I don't want to go back if it means I'm enveloped in recycled air with kids and families without any preparation. I guess that's the snag. I'd commute forever and ever to be with the kids. There's no direction and thus far no plan. I'm horrified. One kid walks in with COVID-19 and I'm responsible for the next community outbreak. So a wide variety of feelings there. Sandy Byard, I would love to hear your thoughts about the fact that we are in an enclosed space together in the schools. I'm sure that's something you've been thinking about in Cedar Rapids, thinking about those spaces and air movement and that recycled air that could carry aerosol droplets.
Right. We have discussed that. We do have a lot of geothermal systems in our district over the past few years, and there aren't a lot of windows in some of our buildings that have been remodeled. We've looked at the CDC recommendations for ventilation. There are some things that our Buildings and Grounds Department are working on right now in terms of looking at how we can increase airflow, what we can do for ventilation. Is there other filtration systems that we could possibly use, particularly in our health offices where we're going to be seeing those children and have those that contact with those kids until their parents can pick them up. So that's definitely under discussion in our district right now.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation who works on behalf of teachers in Iowa. Mike Baranek is president of the Iowa State Education Association. Hello, Mike.
Hello there, Charity. Thanks for having me be a part of your panel today.
Absolutely. And you've been in the classroom for 30 years, but you will not be returning to the classroom in the fall. You were listening to the comments that I was reading from teachers around the state. What are you hearing from teachers?
Well, we are hearing very much the same thing as people are posting on your site. There is concern across the state, and there's a variance in opinions on what that will look like. But as an association, we have some guidelines that we are hoping that all of the districts are following, and those guidelines would include health expertise, understanding what the health professionals are seeing, and we hope that the Department of Health comes up with some guidelines that will help us return to school. Another guideline is that our educators are included in the preparation of these plans. Plans can change throughout the summer. Plans need to be turned in by July 1st, as required by the Department of Ed, but those can be fluid as the summer goes by and we see how COVID-19 is affecting our state. And so it's critically imperative that we have our educators' voice in those decisions. It's also important that we have access to protection. I was able to hear one of your guests talking about face masks and screens, and we believe it's incredibly important that our educators, both classroom teachers and our paraprofessionals, have access to those materials that will help keep everyone safe. And then I think we also need to keep in mind the other principle of equity and what that means for our students when they return to school. This past year, we saw a closure of school, and there were a number of equity issues that bubbled to the surface. And so we have to be prepared as a state how we're going to ensure that all students have the same access, to our learning, and financial resources are incredibly important to help make sure that there is the technology in students' hands and the connectivity out in the communities. It's our belief that the safety and health of our students, of our staff and the communities is incredibly important as we develop these plans and we return to school. As I mentioned, equity really is a huge issue that our state and our country needs to address. Not only equity for our students, but equity for our folks that work in our schools. You just had a person from the Iowa City area saying that she had a hard time with internet connectivity at home. Well, that makes it very difficult to prepare lessons and engage with students when there is distant learning. Another issue that I think we all need to pay attention to, and thankfully the Department of Ed has put this in the guidelines, is the mental health of our students and the mental health of our staff. The ISCA has focused on mental health now for a number of years, but with the closure, we are going to have students return that are in a different place than where they were when this all happened in March. And can you imagine a kindergartner trying to interact with an adult that's wearing a face mask or a face covering? And just what does that mean? And if you are not prepared mentally to learn, the learning is going to be even that much more difficult. And of course, we want all students to learn and grow, but there are some fundamentals that need to be in place. And it's vitally important that districts include the voice of the educators who are working in our schools.
I mentioned earlier that USA Today Ipsos poll that was taken in May that said that 1 in 5 teachers say they are unlikely to go back to school if their classrooms reopen in the fall. Teachers play these things very close to the vest. They need to for job security and for their own planning purposes. So you may not know, Mike, but are you hearing from teachers who probably won't go back in the fall?
Well, we haven't specifically heard from individuals per se, but we are hearing that there are a number of individuals who are concerned about their own health as they return to a school. As one of your guests had mentioned, it's one thing to be able to isolate students and our school employees.
I think we just lost Mike there. We'll get him back in just a second. I want to turn to you, Dr. Rosa, because Mike brought up an important point, and that is mental health. We have so many people who want to be a part of the conversation. We also have this comment from Jenny in Cedar Rapids. She says, is consideration being given to the fact that a lot of kids' learning home environment isn't a safe space? There's no equity when it comes to kids learning at home. That is, of course, a concern for many school districts. Dr. Rosa, how do we balance the mental health of children, their need to be in a social situation, their need to connect with friends and other caring adults, and their health safety?
Yes, I agree with this, but what I would say is the following, right? Schools are part of the community. School leaders are community leaders. So if they raise their voices, if the community stays safe, they use PPE and keep their cases low, then schools are safe. So I think that the conversation really needs to be about how, you know, if we take measures that actually minimize the number of cases in our communities, then we are able to then consider our schools safe and get all the benefits that we have from them, because otherwise, you know, we can implement all the measures that we want in the school and try to keep everyone safe there. But once they go back home, then that's not good. And so we miss all those benefits that, you know, both for mental health and for better learning. So that's why I think that it really needs to be part of that bigger picture. The people that advocate that schools need to be safe, that also that kids need to go back there for mental health, then also need to advocate for communities at large embracing PPE.
Interesting. And so that's something that we have not seen in our communities thus far in Iowa. There's no guidance from the state other than a recommendation that people should wear a face covering in public, but there aren't any rules about this. Dr. Rosa, do you think that there has to be a change in how we recommend people and maybe even require people to go about in public in Iowa?
I think so, because, you know, again, businesses, schools, place of worship, they are actually not bubbles, right? We are all connected. So if we really want to move this forward, then we all as a community need to embrace PPE in the community. And I do think that clear guidance need to be issued in order to do this.
I want to read a couple more teacher comments. This is from Dan. I teach 8th grade U.S. history in West Liberty, and I'm co-president of our local teachers union. I'm very grateful that on top of getting devices and access for all students, the district is paying staff to do training this summer to be better prepared to teach online. We made it through okay this spring, but we will be very well prepared, whatever the fall may bring. Here's another comment from a teacher in Iowa City. I think that a lot of the nervousness comes from the fact that we're a profession that hasn't reintegrated back into normal work life. There's a lot of fear of the unknown as we go back. If students return only at a part-time level, the teachers will still be interacting with all of the students that we would normally interact with, even if it's a few at a time. I personally could be interacting with 160 different kids. Art and PE teachers could be interacting with 500 plus kids as they normally do, even if it's only 10 at a time. In my mind, that makes infection inevitable. While I'm a generally healthy adult with no risk factors, I don't really know how sick I'll be when I get infected. He also is a band teacher. He says it's not really possible to play a band instrument while wearing a mask. How am I going to reach my beginners? I fear being hesitant to even interact with kids and not give it my all because of nervousness of being infected. I also fear being reassigned to a different job that I may be certified to do, but I'm not qualified to do if the district decides that I can't do the job I was hired for in the interest of safety. There is so much unknown, and we are nearly out of time for this hour. We will have more conversations about this as districts make their plans known and as the school year begins in the fall. Clark, I'd like to give you just a moment here at the end. Do you feel confident about the plans that you're coming up with and kids returning to school in Perry?
Absolutely. Feel very confident. And I think what we need to do is back up just a little bit and provide just a little more confidence and a little less fear. The science shows very clearly that this is a tricky bug, but the effect on kids is very, very limited. There is cases, but we can purify the air. We can have our surfaces clean and hopefully make this a much more manageable situation than I think what some people think about. So we're gonna be living with COVID-19. We're going to manage it, and we're going to have, my hope is this, we are going to infuse confidence into people as opposed to fear.
And Dr. Rosanna Rosa, you get the final 30 seconds here. Do you feel confident that students can go back into school buildings this fall?
I think that will depend on how their communities are doing. And my message is, school leaders, use that voice to keep your community safe and encourage the use of PPE in the community.
Dr. Rosanna Rosa, infectious diseases specialist at Unity Point Health in Des Moines. I also spoke this hour with Sandy Byard, health services facilitator for the Cedar Rapids Community School District, Clark Wick, superintendent for the Perry Community School District, and Mike Baranek, president of the Iowa State Education Association. Thank you very much to all of my guests, and thank you to all of the teachers and listeners that shared their thoughts and feelings this hour. There is a long road ahead of us, but obviously this is something that people care deeply about for our students, for our teachers, and for our communities. We'll have more conversations about returning to learn in the future here on Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa.